listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kurula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host of the most, Nikki Kurula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have a legend of legends for our guest today, Mr. Daryl Finnessy. How are you, Daryl?
I'm good, Nikki. How are you?
I'm good, man. I've been so excited to interview you, and I was checking out your music and checking out your reel. You have done some really incredible stuff, and you have an amazing voice. You have an amazing range, and we have so many little parallels. You went to Southern Illinois University. I performed at Southern Illinois University. I love Carbondale. You're originally from Illinois, right?
I love it. Yep. That's where I graduated from, Southern Illinois University, Carbondale.
So how
Bachelor of Music.
That's right. And how old were you when you started singing? You were probably way younger, right?
Oh, my God. What? 4, 5?
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you have a musical family? Did you kind of start singing in the church?
Started singing in the church, strangely enough, a Catholic church. You know, although my grandfather was a Baptist minister, one of the first in East St. Louis, Illinois. But when I was younger, I went to Catholic. I started in Catholic church. I was a choir boy.
Wow.
I chose being a choir boy over being an altar boy. All those years, I wanted to be an altar boy. But then when it came up, the rehearsals were at the same time. I said, "Ooh, it's no brainer, choir boy."
So you started that young. You were really you. What were you singing? Do you remember the music you were singing?
Oh, we're singing Gregorian chant. Kyrie
eleison. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? I started singing in a church choir at an Episcopalian church, also singing a lot of the same stuff. But we were doing some Bach, we were doing Jesu Joy of Man's Desiring, we were doing kinds of like children's chorus, you know, hymns and things.
Oh, right. You were telling me a little about that. Yeah. You were singing the Hollywood Bowl, right?
I actually sang with the Los Angeles Children's Chorus, one of the directors of this church. She started this group called the Los Angeles Children's Chorus with another Presbyterian choral director, and that's how I kind of got a lot of experience. But you were in Illinois. How big was this church choir when you started singing?
Oh, well, you know, the boys' choir, there was two. There was the men's choir and there was the boys' choir. So the boys' choir was probably 15 to 20 boys, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, and the men's choir, maybe about 7 to 10.
Do you remember what voice type you were? Were you a boy soprano? Were you doing
alto? Soprano. You know, all the boys were singing, you know, soprano then, you know. So it was up there rather than the one
you
I sang.
You still have that range, man. I heard that clip in the Rod Stewart clip that you sent. I was like, man, he still has that range. It's crazy. So, you know, you probably have like a 3 or 4 octave range, which is pretty impressive. So you started with classical music, and then you started singing in gospel.
Well, I didn't necessarily start with classical music. I got my degree in classical music, but that was basically just to, you know, to get a solid foundation and so that I could communicate what I already heard in my head, but I wanted to get a more universal way of talking about that, which is to study music and learn how to write and notate music. But I was hearing that before I learned how to write it out or before, you know.
That's crazy. What was your family listening to that was kind of like training your ear? Do you remember?
I mean, I know my mother liked Mahalia Jackson.
Yeah.
I personally, I loved Dionne Warwick.
Yeah.
From the writing of Burt Bacharach.
Oh, yeah.
Burt Bacharach, Hal David. And then all of, you know, the popular groups at the time, there was the Philly sound, there was Motown, you know, so you grew up with all of those influences, you know, Temptations, Miracles. And the way that I kind of oriented myself to singing was I would just copy their voice and I would sing. I would try to sing exactly like them, you know. And by, I realized, I said, wait a minute. Well, I'm sounding like them.
Yeah.
I said, I should be on the radio.
You're like, I'm sounding better than them. Let's be honest.
In some cases.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, tell yourself that, right.
And you know what? Your career is crazy because you've sung with Michael Jackson. You've sung with Rod Stewart. You've sung on numerous recordings with like Ray Charles to soundtracks. Do you ever feel like, you know, you kind of manifested this stuff? Do you think you knew that you just wanted to be a singer and you were driven? Like what kind of, you know, kind of pulled you into that direction?
As a matter of fact, one of the reasons that I kind of came a little late to this today was I sent you two more things. One is a recording of a song that I wrote called Believe, because I knew that was going to come up, the idea of Believe. So if you have a chance, if your engineer can grab that over there. Yeah, and I also sent you a piece of the original audition I did for Michael Jackson, which is on video. So yeah. That's, you know, those, you know, like just like about a minute of that audition. And anyway, in song Believe. So my belief system, I believe in a benevolent God. You know, I believe that there is a maker of all things. There has to be. There are too many things that are coordinated that you don't even know. For instance, that we breathe out carbon dioxide, which plants use and plants put off oxygen.
Right.
I mean, all life is here to sustain other life and to be of service to other life.
Yes.
And there is an intelligent plan behind that, you know. So I believe, again, my belief is that it's interactive. You asked me, did I manifest that? I believe in concert with God, yes, I manifested it. You know, it's with our agreement. You
yeah.
Know? And at times, God's got better ideas than you will ever, well, not at times, all the time. He's got better things to manifest for you than you can even realize, you know.
Well, it's kind of funny. It's like you think you have an idea of what you want, and then the universe or God or whatever it is kind of steers you in different directions, and kind of it always blows your expectations out of the
way.
You know what I mean? That's the kind of thing that it does.
Let me give you a quick anecdote about that.
Yeah, please.
I have studied French in high school and college, right? So it came around that I got an opportunity. I got called from one of the horn section guys from Earth, Wind & Fire, Louis Satterfield.
Wow.
Because I had worked with them. I had done a bunch of stuff with them. They're from Chicago. And I didn't know them back home. But since I've been out here, I know them. I've done stuff with, you know, the horn guys from Earth, Wind & Fire. Anyway, he had called me. So, and they were going to do it. You know, so I knew I got, and I speak French too. I'm like, I got the leg up all in every way you can think of. I'm going to get this right. And it was for a woman called France Gall. And Franz Gall, it is the equivalent of like the Barbra Streisand in France, right? And her home was like 20 miles outside of Paris. So I'm thinking, oh my God, what a perfect thing. Because early on, and like when I was a young teenager, I thought, I want to live for Paris in 1 year. For 1 year in my life, at some point, I'd like to live in Paris. And I thought, wow, here's that manifestation coming, man. Because I know I'm getting this gig, right? I speak French, can sing the stuff, you know, in my sleep, right? Anyway, did the audition. They loved it. Got a call a couple of days later. They decided they wanted to go with women instead of men. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God, it couldn't have been more perfect of what I want. You know what happened 2 weeks later?
What?
The audition for Michael Jackson World Tour.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
Had I gotten the France Gall thing, I wouldn't have gone on with Michael, which the rest is history about that. And so when I remember pulling into, coming into town, I think it was on the tour bus and thinking, coming into Paris thinking, wow. So I'm here in Paris on Michael Jackson week, rather than having been here with Franz Gall, which would have been a wonderful thing as well. But wow, you know, I mean, God's got bigger plans and bigger ideas than you can come up with, you know?
Yeah. And then, you know what? And I remember asking you about this because like, I've been watching you on YouTube videos for years before we met, just seeing you with Michael and seeing you in different performances. And so when I saw you performing with Dorian, who's also been a guest on the show, I was like, I know this guy was singing with Michael Jackson. So that was the first thing I came up to you and said, I was like, did you sing with Michael Jackson? You said, yeah. How did you know? I said, I've been watching you for about 10 years on every Michael Jackson video I could find. And, you know, it was such a thrill to ask you this question, which we had on the phone. But I wanted you to tell me what that audition process was like, because I know you were kind of like, you were working with some of the brothers in the Jackson family, but to do that Michael Jackson audition, this is such one of the most fascinating stories that I've ever heard.
Well, they put, I had had a record deal with Quincy Jones, you know, so I was kind of affiliated with the camp, you know, of Michael. And now I hadn't worked with the brothers before that. I hadn't worked with Michael's brothers, and I hadn't worked with Michael before that. So they got this audition that they kind of put out a call to like the top singers in town, and well, not only in town, around the country, around the world. They put out the call to some of the top, you know, top singers that were on record, you know. And so I was one of the top, at the time, one of the top singers, top session singers in Los Angeles. So my name would be...
You still are, bro.
Well, thank you. Well, my name would have been one that came up, right?
Right.
So I got the call for the audition, and they kind of put us together in groups of four. You know, Greg Fillinganes was the musical director, and he was going to play and have us in these different groups of four configurations of four singers that they put together. And they had us, you know, to sing a couple of songs. Now, personally, I thought that the band was playing too loud, that they wouldn't, you know, they weren't going to be able to hear us well, you know. And the other thing was, some of the other singers were nervous, naturally, and understandably, some of them were new. And this one girl hadn't really ever even sang any background stuff. She had just done like some Broadway-ish kind of singing. Right. And she was very beautiful and exotic. I believe that's why she got picked. Anyway, after we did our, you know, we did little excerpts from a few of the songs, you know, Billie Jean, you know, Thriller, et cetera. And anyway, and so they said, thank you, right? And then Nelson Hayes, who was the one, you know, delivering audition stuff to Michael, right? He was taping everything. You know, he said, okay, we'll get back to you, right? So I waited a day or so. That same week, I had auditioned for the Dolly Parton show. Dolly Parton was going to have, like, a variety show, something like the old Carol Burnett show or Rowan and Martin Laughing, or, you know, just kind of one of the traditional, like, where she'd be doing, she'd be singing, then she'd be doing, like, you know, comical skits and stuff.
Yep.
She wanted a group of four guys. These four guys were going to get to do those comical skits and stuff with her. And I think, as you know from my resume, I'm an actor as well. Yep. I mean, this is going to be like the excellent, most perfect opportunity. Being on mainstream television, prime time, Dolly Parton show every week, getting to not only sing with her, but also to act and be a part of these skits and just kind of show off all your wares. And I'm like, and not have to leave town and still keep all this other work that you've been doing.
Because
maybe that taping was going to be like a couple hours, you know, 3-4 hours a week. Everybody else that worked with me, come on, they're going to like hold stuff for you and, you know, and kind of schedule around your schedule, you know, because I work with a lot of great producers, you know, act great with me. And so anyway, because I had auditioned and gotten the Dolly Parton show, using this song called Jukebox Saturday Night, if you get a chance to play the audition, you'll hear it. It's the same song that I taught the Dolly Parton folks, guys that we rehearsed that, and we auditioned with that. And I also taught the folks, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, the other three that I called to audition with me to do Michael's thing. Anyway, I called Nelson, and I said, Nelson, I don't want to be pushy, but, you know, I'm perfectly willing to wait, you know, for your process, but I auditioned for the Dolly Parton show this week, and I got that, you know, and I don't want to be rude to them. I want to be able to tell them something, you know.
Right.
Or can you wait a couple of days, or I'm trying to find out, and, you know, they were being gracious, you know, and I don't want to be like some jerk, like, hey, you know, and not call, not say anything. Anyway, he said, man, you should probably take that gig because, you know, Michael's not sure, you know. And I was about to hang up with the phone because, first of all, it's nerve-wracking. You get a chance to go on a Michael Jackson World Tour and to be on primetime national television the same week.
It's like all the gigs. They're rains and pours.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, so I was about to hang up. And then just as a point of information, I said, you know what? I just have to say this. I have to get this off my chest. I said, Nelson, what it is, it's not that Michael doesn't know, you know, he said he wants a group that's been singing together. Like, you know, like the Waters and then he mentioned the Modern Heirs, which was a group for Elvis Presley. They were Elvis Presley's group.
Yep.
And I said, okay, well, he didn't say the Waters. I said the Waters. I said to him, well, if he wants the groups that's been together, you know, because I'd work with the Waters, they're great. You know, it's like, hey, I don't have any problem with the best folks getting the gig, right? So I said, well, why not the Waters? You know, it's like, or, you know, well, he said he wants a new group. He wants, you know, he wants new faces. And I was about to hang up again. And I said, you know what? It's not that he wants a group of people that's been singing together. He wants people that can sing together. Because if I put a group together for you, you're going to think we've been singing together for 20 years. Because right. I'm going to get people that know how to sing harmonies and can do that.
Right.
And I was just really saying that as a point of information, kind of out of frustration. It's a jam, man. It's like, I can put a group together. You think we've been singing together forever.
Right.
He said, well, why don't you do that? I went, oh, okay. You know. So we set it up for like 11 the next morning. I called Dorian Holly.
Yeah.
Kevin Dorsey, who had also auditioned with him to do a Dolly Parton thing. And Sheryl Crow. So Dorian Holly, Kevin Dorsey, Sheryl Crow. I called them, got them to come over to my house.
All legends.
I first taught them Jukebox Saturday Night, which is like a 40s, like, I hope you can play it. I hope you can get to play it. If you're not, it's like a 40s, Benny Goodman. I believe Benny Goodman wrote it, or let me, who recorded it? Anyway, it's like a 40s song.
Okay.
That's got closed chord harmonies and not, so like everybody that can necessarily sing harmonies wouldn't not be able to sing some of these kind of closed chords. It's kind of like
ninths and seconds.
Exactly. It's going to show that off. And I also wanted to do it a cappella. Just put the camera on us a cappella. No band, no nothing. That way he can hear us. I know that as a singer or as a contractor, that's what I would want to hear.
Right.
That would be like the clearest thing to show me, you know, how good these singers are. So that's what we did. I taught them Jukebox Saturday Night, excerpts from, Billie Jean, Thriller, Beat It, what's that, 2-9, gonna leave that 9-to-5 up on the shelf, Off the Wall.
Yeah.
So we'd have like a, you know, a little plethora of songs that kind of show different pieces of Michael's stuff, because Michael's stuff is eclectic, it comes from all over the place. So, but the first thing we did, I said, put the camera on us, we'll introduce ourselves, hi, I'm Daryl Fennessy, blah, 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 everybody introduce yourself. Had my pitch pipe with me, we're doing acapella, and I blew into the pitch pipe to give us a key orientation, and we did Jukebox Saturday Night. Excuse me.
It's all right.
We did that first. Now later, when Nelson called me back that afternoon, and he had, you know, gone over to Michael's place, he said, I'm sitting in Michael's bedroom. I'm playing a tape for him. He said, when Michael heard Jukebox Saturday Night, he said, when Michael heard about 20 seconds of Jukebox Saturday Night, he was like, that's them.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, you basically are responsible for launching these careers. Like, what's this? And you've got the opportunity to tour with Michael for like 2 or 3 decades. I mean,
that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
That's good living right there. That's good. You know, before we do anything, I want to play everybody a little bit of the sizzle reel just to show people kind of a little glimpse of what you've done. So we're going to play your sizzle reel first. Here's okay. Daryl Fennessy's sizzle reel. I'm so slamming. And that's you singing Stevie Wonder, Do I Do, right?
Right, right. I did that on Dancing with the Stars. That's what that song.
Oh, wild. I mean, I've been just watching that clip, all those clips of you singing with Rod Stewart and singing with MJ. I mean, you are like a human highlight film of music exploration. You kind of like done all these things. So you're on the gig with Michael. What was that first rehearsal like?
You know what blew my mind? They were testing the lasers first day that we came in. And so when they test lasers, they have to, you know, first of all, it was on a sound stage at Universal Studios, which is, well, first thing that blew my mind is it was 5 minutes from my house where they are, you know, where we rehearsed at Universal Studios. I live in Burbank. So they're testing the lasers, right? So I'm seeing, and it's kind of when the smoke clears, you see this like space junkyard, which is what the stage was going to be like for the first piece of the tour that's going to be Japan. One of the things that kind of blew my mind was it just kind of the idea that, okay, I'm going to do one thing. I'm going to get there and I'm going to sing. I'm going to do a little dance and I'm going to do a little bit of singing. But look at all of this that's going to be surrounding me. Look at what it takes to make this show
right
be what it is. One, this is Michael's vision. And the other thing is, wow, this is, I mean, all of these excellent technicians that have to come together to make a show like this happen. I think that was the most impressive thing to me. It's like, oh my God, to coordinate all of these people's labors and expertises in order to put on a show like this. Wow, this is, you know, it's not just, you know, not just, you know, me singing a couple of notes here and there. There's a lot that's got to go right,
right
to make this show, you know, be very well executed and come off night after night after night, you know.
And that's people like Prince in the audience. You know what I mean? Like Prince was, there were interviews I've read where he talked about every kind of different decade that he saw Michael in.
Uh-huh.
You were on stage with all of these different bands. I mean, it's so crazy. It's like Prince was just, and he would say how special it was. He would say like, it was like this special experience to see Michael and everybody that performed with him, to see these kind of performances, you know. And he talks about
anybody and everybody would be showing up. I mean, Steve Perry used to be coming to our rehearsals. I mean, I'd have to step around Elizabeth Taylor to go on stage, you know.
Wow.
Steven Spielberg with his freaking handy cam, you know, shooting the show from the standing on the side of the stage, you know. Gregory Peck, you know, just on and on, man. You know, Leonard Bernstein, you know, gave me a ride from rehearsal back to the hotel, you know. And by the way, one of the things that was most impressive, we're in New York, he and Brooke Shields came back at the same time. He gave me a ride back to the hotel because we were talking. He put in his tape. He had Prince playing in his limo.
What?
I'm going, whoa.
That is awesome.
Leonard Bernstein playing Prince. I'm like, yes. Of course, it makes sense. Of course, he'd be playing Prince, right?
I mean, you know what? You just crossed so many worlds for me because I was sang Leonard Bernstein's Mass. I've always loved Leonard Bernstein. To think that he was listening to Prince, I mean, you just made my whole day, man. That's
we were in this one dinner at somebody's castle. It was in Austria. And, you know, Quincy was there, Leonard Bernstein. We're sitting up at this table. It's like a Knights of the, you know, round table type, you know, wooden table in this castle. And Leonard Bernstein is joking about how they let he and Quincy have their own personal audience, their own chance to go into the Sistine Chapel by themselves, right?
Wow.
And he says that they're, so he and Quincy are like laying on the floor, you know, with their, looking up at the ceiling, right? You know, that famous thing where I think it's like God's hand reaching out to man.
Yeah, the two fingers.
And this is how we, yourself included, are as artists. We're just these silly kids, man. He's like, and I said, he said, he looked around, he whispered, mofo. And started laughing just like you did just now.
That is crazy. That is so crazy. I mean, the experiences and rehearsals, I mean, you know, I always like, you know, I don't know if you feel like this. Like, I always have this like feeling that rehearsals, if performances can get to like 75% of what a rehearsal sounds like, then it's a great performance.
Yes.
So tell me what those rehearsals were like with MJ and with the whole band. And by the way, Gregory Fillinganes has come and played on this keyboard. We've got in this room. So, man, everybody in my band, they were all top of the game. They were the best of the best.
Greg is ridiculous, man. Greg's talent is – I mean, I used to literally envision – God's hand being on Greg's shoulder while he's playing on stage. Wow. Because he plays stuff that you can't play.
Yep.
He plays stuff that a human being can't. It's like his rhythm and where he's at with his choices. And then he's dancing and he's dancing and then clowning around, acting a fool, and just playing just the most profound stuff you ever want to hear.
Yep.
But you were asking me about rehearsals. Man, one of the things we rehearsed, I want to say about, I know it was 2 months, maybe longer. Anyway, towards the end of rehearsal, I mean, and you rehearse every aspect of the show. I mean, from what the singing is, the choreography, all the music, the breakdowns in the music, what the lighting is going to be, all the special effects.
Chills.
Huh?
I got chills. You know,
just every aspect of the show, right? So in the last week, get this, man. In the last week, we did the show in its entirety. We're talking about costume changes, everything, lighting, everything, special effects, magic tricks, all of that. 3 times a day, we did the show 3 times back to back. I mean, that's how thorough Michael wants to be. So by the time you get on stage in front of an audience, you can do it in your sleep. You know the show inside and out. You've rehearsed it like a play. And these big tours are like that. I mean, there's so many things to be coordinated. It's more like putting on a stage play, you know, than anything else you could compare it with, because lighting cues have to be exact. Dress cues have to be exact. I mean, it's like, you know, just like a race car pulls into the pit and they got like 30 seconds to change things out and get, it's that kind of thing going on stage. So all aspects of that have to be rehearsed and timed and made to be, for Michael, perfect.
Right.
So the last week, we would run the show 3 times a day, you know. And I can't tell you how comfortable that makes you feel, you know. And it's like, you know the show, so it's not like you got to be trying to remember, oh, am I supposed to do this? By the time you've done that show for a couple of months or so, it's like now you're just working on the magic every night. You know, where can we go to tonight? Where can I take it to tonight? It's going to be that much. Put that little bit more sparkle or shine on it tonight, you know?
That is amazing. And not only that, it's like, you know, it's almost like Michael wanted the music to just be in your spirit, in your essence, in your vibe, so that it made room for something heavenly to kind of take over and bring it all together like it was always doing. I mean, it's like when I feel like with music, when you know something so well, that's when you are allowed this extra level of magic that kind of takes over. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, because there's no guesswork. There's no like conscious like thinking. It just becomes subconscious and not thinking.
And you can do what the art is meant to do, which is our art is meant to tell a story.
Yeah.
You know? So you can get up there and tell the story. You can take that story to the magical place of where that story is supposed to be, rather than thinking, oh, do I come in here or do I remember, you know.
Right.
I mean, we're professional and love yourself as well. We can learn a show in an afternoon and come start and do stuff, you know. But it's like to have it in your body and to know it inside and out, you know. Yeah, I did a show the other night, a Peter Gabriel tribute, where I did a couple of songs. And, you know, and I had a stage prompter, you know, with my lyrics on it, you know. And you know, so it's like, yeah, I know how to, you know, glance down there and nobody knows I'm looking up. But it's not the same as like if it's in your body, you know.
Yes. Yep.
You're breathing it out, you know.
I'm going to ask you a question that everybody listening is probably thinking. And that is, while you're on stage, you're, you know, performing with this amazing group of musicians and singers, Michael Jackson's doing his unbelievable thing of being Michael Jackson. What was a moment that kind of made you catch your breath, either that Michael did or the band did as a whole? What was a moment that just was so striking as a memory that you were like, oh my goodness, this is crazy that this is
come
all
on, come on, Nikki. First of all, you've got to know that there's a million of those.
Yeah, of course, you of know, course.
Every night. There's a million of those every night.
Right.
But when you were just talking, what popped in my head was Stranger in Moscow.
Oh, God, give me chills. I love that song.
Yeah. You know, because Michael just all of this, you know, this fantastic upbeat stuff and all the bells and whistles, but then he'll slow it down to, you know, a slow song, a beautiful, slow, haunting song. And then his movements juxtaposed against what he's singing, he'll do fast movements too. I mean, it's a part of Michael's magic, but he comes up with this stuff, man.
Right.
The song is slow, but he's doing something fast or he's doing something unexpected. Yeah, that song used to, again, like I said, I mentioned that because that's what popped in my head when you were just talking. Because there's so many, you know, but yeah, Stranger in Moscow was one of my favorites. It's haunting and it's, yeah. And, you know, and I had been there to Moscow with him, you know, so I knew what this song was born of, you know.
Wow. All right, we're going to play your performance reel because now I want to show people what you've done with Michael and Rod and all these great performers. So here's Daryl Finnessy's performance reel.
Okay.
Open up!
Tell me I'm making it up, Florence. Tell me I'm making it up, ho.
You rubbing up against him all up in front of me.
I was dancing with him.
Why you rubbing up against him?
Hey, get him out of my face.
You see what I'm talking about? The disrespect.
Sir, you just stay in the kitchen with Officer Rose. I'll take care of your wife.
What do you mean, take care of? This is my house.
Yeah, I know it's your house.
Hey, you think that's funny?
No, I don't.
Maybe this gentleman wants to hear my side of the story.
That's right, sweetheart. That's right. That's
sweetheart,
right.
That's she hit me.
Break it, sweetheart.
Drop that gun. You drop it now.
She hit your sweetheart.
Listen to me very carefully. If you hand me that gun right now, I'm going to use my discretion and forget any of this ever happened. But if you don't, there's going to be some very serious consequences.
Listen to him, Walter, please. Please listen to him.
Walter. How many times do I have to make you cry? Can you tell me, you know the reason why? What has happened to the man you love? What in the world I be thinking of? How much I hurt? Just don't think you know. From now on, try to change my way.
We'll be together for the rest of our day.
I like to blame the world for the trouble we've known. Ain't nobody's fault.
No, it ain't nobody's fault. It ain't nobody's fault. But I'm.
Causing peace and human relations to turn for the global field. I'd rather hear both sides and tell you, see, it's not about races, just places, faces. Where your blood comes from is where your space is. See, you sharp to your color, that goes to see my life be.
You are my lover's choice. Finicky and Dorian Holly. Take another. Dal Finicky and Dorian Holly here. Vocal acrobatics.
When we were just kids, I knew you were the one for me. I couldn't wait to grow up and live out my fantasy. And my dreams have finally come true. Now that you've said I abba dabba do. I always hope that my love was the key to your heart. Each night I prayed that nothing would ever keep us apart. And my dreams have finally come true. Now that you've said I abba dabba do. So I say I love you, I abba dabba do. I love you, I yabba dabba do. I love you, I yabba dabba do. So I say I love you, I yabba dabba do. I love you, I yabba dabba do. I love you.
So slamming, man. I mean, I got to tell you a couple things. First of all, man, it's such a huge...
Thank you. Thank you, by the way.
A huge testament to your talent that Michael sings and then gives you these amazing showcases of solo. Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, that level of respect. I mean, he doesn't do it unless he knows that you can do it and pull it off. And man... You do it with flying colors, both the singing and the rapping. I have to give you a huge compliment, too. The Cop Rock, you know, scene I was watching before the show again, you got some serious acting chops, too. I mean, it's, you know, like, I don't say that a lot about a lot of singers that do the crossover thing, but you actually are as equally as great a singer as you are as an actor.
That means a lot. Thank you.
I mean it. I mean it.
Because I think a lot of your talent, dude, for you to say that, that means a lot to me.
No, I'm telling you, and you know what? You like, I could see you doing musical theater, like, or musicals and acting. You could do, I mean, you could do any of it, like, anytime, because you have the chops. And then you have this Flintstones character. You had a Hanna-Barbera did a, you know, they made you as a character in the Flintstones. Man, you know,
I was like blown away. I knew, I forget which one of them, either Hanna or Barbera was there in the studio when I recorded it. And that's when I first found out. I didn't know this before. When they do, they animate to performances. They'll have a performance, and then they'll animate to that performance. You know, so he's watching you. So he's watching and making sketches, you know. So, you know, you're wondering what that might look like or if they're going to end up you know.
Right.
Oh, man, when I finally saw that, I went, wow.
You're like, oh, my God.
Kind of captured a vibe that kind of makes me feel like me, you know. You know, first brother in Bedrock.
That's right. But you know what? It's also, too, you have the Bedrock, like, costume, which made it so cool because, like, you're in the Flintstones. You're hanging with Fred and Will.
Damn, I mean, you know.
It's pretty, pretty epic. And then we have a parallel, too. Like, you worked with Rod Stewart for a couple tours and a couple records. I actually sang at his wedding to Rachel Hunter when I was 13.
Wow.
And you also sang with Luther Vandross.
Yeah.
I sang with Luther on a record that he did for the movie Hero. So I'm like, we have all these parallels.
Wow.
Like, Carol, you are such a badass. And
well, thank
all
you,
these
man.
Recordings with Stevie Wonder and Anita Baker and B.B. King and all these film soundtracks. I mean, it's just like you have this eclectic ability to just jump from project to project. How do you feel like you're able to just contribute to all of these so well? Is it just like all of these tours have kind of prepared you for it, or you just feel like you're open to the adventure of every experience?
The very last thing you said, I'm open to the experience, and I love stuff. You know what I mean? When you love is the glue to all of that, you know? Yeah. So if I'm singing, you know, whatever style that I'm singing with Rod or singing with Michael, I love those equally when I'm doing them. I am totally immersed in that thing when I'm doing it, you know, and giving it all, you know, and up for the adventure of it, you know. And I think, you know, we learn to be scared along the way. You know what I mean? Kids aren't afraid to do anything.
Right.
You know, I just haven't lost that kids, like, I'm naive like a kid. You know, it's like, oh, I can do that. I'll try that, you know. Yeah. And well, I think that attitude has just taken me far, you know.
When I first saw you and Dorian perform the Marvin Gaye What's Going On record, he did it all live. When as soon as I saw you guys walk on stage, I was like, this is going to be slamming. Just because I knew the vocals were going to be ridiculous.
Right,
like,
right, man, everything, right, like, right.
All the parts were there. It's like, and you know, you can't replace, like, you and Dorian have been singing together probably for like 30 or 40 years, something like
and
that.
And we've done so much stuff together,
so
man.
Much.
And again, a labor of love, man. I mean, that's a blessing in and of itself to have, like, your best friend
right
around the world with you, you know, and have
right.
You know, yeah,
and
we turned each other on to different things over the years, you know. Yeah. It's like, it doesn't get better,
but you sound like you've been singing together like that long. That's what's so cool, and you cannot replace that with like any, you know what I mean, like that level of experience. It just you cannot replace the time. So it's like when you guys were singing together, it was like you just know you guys feel each other on a level that's just deep. It's spiritual. It's just like, it has time, it has, you know, seasoning, just road seasoning.
Right.
Just, it's heavy. It's so heavy. Tell me when you're kind of working with, you know, first of all, that Rod Stewart clip where you sing that super high note. I mean, your range is ridiculous. Are you ever in this place where you're like, I don't know if that note's going to be there, because that high note can't always be there on every night.
Right, right. Well, you know, you kind of, there are times when, you know, so you kind of test it out ahead of time, you know.
Right,
see, okay,
right.
If I got that today, you know. And the other thing is, like, people ask me, well, what is your range? You know what? I don't know what my range is because I don't want to know, because when I know, I'm limiting it, you know.
Right.
I'm starting to put that man-made take on it rather than just let it be what God intended, you know.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
In the same way as singing in different styles, and I don't prejudge something like, "Oh, that's country, so that's going to be different." I'm not able. It's music, and I love music.
Yeah.
I love telling that story. Let me help, you know. Let me help Dolly Parton, you know, tell her story the way she wants to tell. Let me help Rod tell his story the way that he wants to tell it. Let me lend my abilities to that. That is, and it's that kind of love and wanting to be of service, you know.
Yeah,
that takes me over the finish line. I believe that's what I believe more than anything else. You know, God has given you the gifts, and if you have nerve enough to use them and are thankful enough to use them, I think that makes God smile.
Yeah,
and throws more stuff your way. You know,
I think it's also interesting too. Like, what I found fascinating, like when you and I've had conversations, you still are such a huge fan of music, and it's like there are a lot of, you know this, as people just keep performing or playing or singing, sometimes they can get jaded by how great music can be. And like, you know, you don't have that. It's like, I remember you telling me about this song on Peaky Blinders. You said this song moved me to tears, and I went and checked it out, and I was like, this is so cool, because her voice was just so unique, and it was just like such a cool song. And I'm like, I love when people, especially people like yourself that are so well versed in music, are still fans of music, because you don't always find that.
Nikki, it's like, it's mind-boggling to me that they aren't.
Same. Yeah, I feel the
that
same.
They aren't. I mean, come on. People think, I mean, you're a musician, you're a singer, you're a writer. Yeah. You know what I'm getting ready to say. People think they love music. Dude, we will listen to a drum roll 56 times over and over and over. You know what I mean? We will go through and listen to like one element of something forever and forever and forever. Cause we love music, and I love the sounds. I love the storytelling, and there is no end to it. You know, I mean, I've only gotten the tip of the iceberg, as they say, of experience and doing stuff. You know, I'm trying to be open to, you know, to that magic, more and more magic, you know, and that magic, there's no two moments that are alike. So how's anything been there, done that? You know,
yeah.
I haven't been there and done anything. I've been there, you know, and I've done some of it. I want to do more of it.
You've done a lot. Let's be honest. You've done a lot of stuff. But you know what? You still stay open, and you're still like mesmerized by the magic and wonder of music. And I just hope that never leaves.
Of life in general, Nikki.
Yeah.
Of life in general, man. You
and
know?
I know you're really big into scuba diving. Let's talk about that a little bit, because it's like,
God.
you know what? Tell me, like, because I also love the water. I love the ocean. Tell me about, you love skiing. You love, you know, scuba diving. Tell me how those kind of natural wonders and experiences kind of shape you as a musician and artist.
Well, one thing that's a parallel with those things, like performing, especially say with skiing and or scuba diving, both of those things are kind of life-threatening things. Not that performing is, but they're things where you have to be in the moment.
Right.
You know, to deliver. Yep. On stage, you need to be in the moment. To be the best deliverance, the best delivery comes from being in the moment and breathe. Like people used to ask me, man, aren't you bored of doing that same, you know, you're singing the same thing night after night after night. I'm like, well, in the first place, I'm not singing the same thing night after night after night. Right. There's subtle new, I'm finding it new every night. That's the magic.
Yep.
You know, and that's what I love about scuba diving and or skiing. Both of them, you have to be in the moment. I mean, they're life-threatening things. You need to be making sure the equipment is working right. You need to be making sure you're paying attention to the environment around you. You know, you can slip and fall. You can, anything can happen. So you need, so I love that element of being on stage like that. Okay, right now, go. It's happening. You know, no more rehearsals. It's got to happen right now. You got to be on it. You got to be on top of it. Same thing with skiing, scuba diving. You know, okay, you just hit the water. It's, you know, you need to have your eyes, you need to be paying attention, you need to be aware of what's around you. And not only that, even more importantly with all of this, you need to be enjoying that moment of your life.
Yep.
Right now, I need to be loving this interview and enjoying you and enjoying sharing the story with you and the other people. If I'm not, I'm not living right now. And I'm trying to live every moment of it, you know?
You said it. You said, Daryl, I could do a 5-hour interview with you. We're going to have to wrap up right now, but I'm going to give you an open window. Anytime you want to showcase music or your story, you have an open invitation to come back on Wake Up Hollywood. We're going to list your socials on Facebook and Instagram on our LA Talk Radio website. Thank you so much for being a guest on LA Talk Radio on Wake Up Hollywood. You are such a force of nature in music and spirit. And we're going to collaborate on some music. We're going to make some music together.
Definitely, man. I want to do that. Oh, let me share some good news that I just got recently in this last month. They are, Frasier, the television show I wrote the lyrics to the theme song, is getting a reboot. And they're using my theme song again.
That's so awesome. Congratulations. Yeah.
I went to the taping of the 10th show, which was a Christmas show. So they've already got 10 shows in the can already. And I went to the rap party for that. And it's funny, I never went to a taping. You know, the show was on the air for 11 years. I never went to a taping before. You know, you're working, right? We're working so much, right? So this time around, I made an appointment. I went over and met Kelsey, and, you know, and the guy gave me a hug, man. And he's really a sweet guy, you know?
That's awesome. It's well-deserved. And here's to many more. So, Daryl, thank you once again for being a guest and sharing your story. And we're going to have you back on, okay? So keep on loving music the way you do. We are going to work on music together. I promise you that.
And I want to do that.
And you know what? Lots of love and light to you. And you know what? On behalf of Sam, myself, and Daryl, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We're going to have Daryl back soon. So peace and love to everybody. Daryl, you are an amazing cat. Thank you again for being a guest.
Thank you, Nikki. Thank you. So are you, my friend.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.